Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats, health and wellness advice for women over 40 and beyond with Amanda Thebe. This is a show full of hot topics specifically for hot women. Amanda Thebe is a force of nature for women who are experiencing menopause hell and want to start feeling healthy and fit in their 40s and beyond. Through her very frank articles, podcasts, and hilarious social media presence, she's here to help you with informative advice while making you laugh like a 20-year-old throughout. Her raging fans have called her an unstoppable inspiration, resilient bitch, and one woman called her the over 40 guru to watch in 2017. Please visit us at fitandchips.com. And now, here's your host, Amanda Thebe.
Hello and welcome back to Fit and Chips Chats. I am super excited this week to introduce you to my good friend, Fabi. Fabi Mariette describes herself as a movement and mindset maven, which I actually love. I think she should get t-shirts made with that on. So let me just tell you a little bit about Fabi. She is a certified personal trainer and kettlebell instructor, and she does DVRT Ultimate Sandbags too, I know for sure. She is a Body Positive Fitness Alliance affiliated professional, as well as a certified mindset coach and a PN, Precision Nutrition Level 1 coach. In 2015, she worked for an international entertainment giant, Cirque du Soleil. She made that decision to leave the company and just focus on all things fitness and mindset. And I love following Fabi. She has great insight into body positivity. She always likes to share things that bring more strength, energy, and ease and compassion into people's lives. As well as that, Fabi is also an avid food explorer, yoga adventurer, budding burlesque dancer, which I think we might touch on, mother, and lastly, she's also the birthday girl. I don't know whether you even knew that I knew that, Fabi.
Hi! I'm actually very honored to be speaking to you on this day. It feels like a real treat for me.
Yes, so happy birthday, happy birthday. Thank you. And Fabi, please tell me a little bit about yourself.
Thank you for that beautiful introduction. I think you touched on a lot of good points. But yes, I'm someone who comes from a background of communications. And just over 2 years ago, made a big switch. I always had sort of a calling towards what began as fitness. And suddenly 2 years ago, as some people say, you know, I jumped without a parachute and decided to really go for it. But that decision didn't come necessarily lightly. It's something that was in the works for a long time. So just to give you a little bit of background, I sort of experienced a bit of a crisis, I would say, in my early 30s. And I'm turning 39 today. So go back, you know, several years. And that was actually just couple months after the birth of my youngest, my son, who is now 5, I distinctly remember being in the car and it was raining. I really have like that image in my head, and having this sort of deep sense of emptiness of the what now? Because I felt that I checked all the boxes. You know, I bought a house. I had this wonderful partner. I had 2 beautiful children of my own and a stepdaughter who's absolutely wonderful and with whom I had a great relationship. I had my career in communications, which was going well, and yet I didn't feel fulfilled. And that was a very, very scary feeling for me as someone who had essentially pretty much always played by the rules. And I thought that, you know, playing by the rules would bring me happiness. And while I was not wholly unhappy, I was really not fulfilled at that moment. And this is when I decided to just try, seek out something. And I went all over the place, I can tell you. But over time, one of the things that struck me is that I was not being bold enough. That my desire to play by the rules was actually keeping me from experiencing things that would help me grow. And so I decided to do something kind of crazy, and just start experimenting with things. That happened at a very fateful moment, I would say, for myself, because at that moment, my husband, who works in the entertainment industry and works on putting on really, really big shows, was invited to go to Russia. That was back in early 2014 for the Sochi Olympics to work on that. So that essentially left me at home with two extremely young children. My son was 18 months old. My daughter was 4 and a half, in the middle of winter, which in Canada means, you know, some below 40 Fahrenheit or Celsius at that point. It sort of reaches each other. So a lot of snow, two young children working full time, and just dealing with it all.
And so at that stage, Fabi, did you feel, and let's just tell people, you're Canadian, sorry, you're from Quebec.
Yes.
And you can't hear it in the accent. In fact, actually, we were going to talk about that, weren't we, Fabi? We have English and we have Quebecois. We're going to try and speak slowly today. So do you feel as though you'd reached like that tipping point in your life where you were thinking, I have to do something now. If I don't do something now, I'm going to start falling into the abyss. What did you do?
What I realized, and it was an interesting transition, because my way of coping at that moment was by organizing things. And, you know, I thought somehow if I could, you know, find the system to make things work, if I could, you know, get to the point of optimal organization, it would make me happy. But clearly that wasn't happening. And where it brought me is that I actually needed to dig a little deeper and become extremely clear in how I was feeling through it all. And, you know, as someone who, again, playing by the rules, trying to be very organized, being in touch with my feelings was not something that was very natural to me. But I think that essentially the fact that at the moment my partner was away sort of forced me, you know, if we wanted to communicate, I had to know exactly how I was feeling to be able to, you know, share it with him and for us to be able to have, you know, the real conversations instead of just falling into bitterness and resentment. And that was quite the interesting process. And from there, and also realizing that, you know, I just needed to be bolder because my life would keep getting smaller on its own, I started doing what I saw at the time to be, you know, crazy things. One of the things I did at that moment was decide to shave my head completely for a fundraiser. The physical part of it was a little crazy, but the super uncomfortable part of it for me was that suddenly I had to go out and ask for help from others. I had to ask them to support me. It wasn't something that I could do quietly on my own in my little corner. And getting more practice in doing that and, you know, realizing that, yes, people would respond positively to that helped me try other things. So it became...
Fabi, just to go back to the asking for help. I think that that's worth just discussing for a moment. So I can relate to that fully because I arrived in Canada with a small baby and then had another child while I was in Toronto. I didn't have any family at all. So I was on my own with the children, which is fine. Plenty of people do it on their own with without their family there. My husband was working 120 hours a week, and there were situations when I just felt like I was drowning, especially if I got sick or, you know, one of the children got sick, and I just felt as well that it was overwhelming. And I never asked for help because it just wasn't what I would do. I was never, you know, I was always a person that could cope with situations. And I've definitely turned things around now, and I have no problems at all asking for help. In fact, it's been a bit of a lifesaver for me, because if I tell people now that I just can't meet their expectations, it feels quite empowering. And instead of sort of suffering in silence on my own and just getting through things, but then just feeling exhausted with all of these feelings of, almost been a failure, now I've been able to change that dialogue and just realize that it's actually okay to need help. And I think, is that what happened to you?
It was. And what was extremely interesting at that time, I heard about a book which was had quite an influence on my own journey, called The Confidence Code, by authors Katie Kay and Claire Shipman. And as someone who did not identify at all as being very confident, I was very, very curious to have those, you know, two female authors writing about confidence. And one bit of the book struck me, but like a ton of bricks, which was the idea that confident people are not the people doing everything on their own, but confidence means being able to ask for what you need. I'm telling you, Amanda, I read that and I cried.
Yeah.
I absolutely cried for, you know, the decades that I had spent believing that the only way to be strong was to do everything on my own.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yes.
And that really resonates with me as well. And I think that's okay. Can you name that book again, please?
Yes, so it's called The Confidence Code.
Yeah, that's great. By
Katie Kay and Claire Shipman.
And you also mentioned, just going back to what you were talking about feeling small inside, and that's actually leads us on to the main meat and bones of the topic today. We were discussing outside of this that for too long women have been expected to be small, small in our voice, small in our bodies, and in our expectations of ourselves. Sometimes, and there was something that you said to me that I'd like you to just really discuss deeper, and it's how you said that we often feel small inside, but we can't be anything other than that on the outside. Is that, have I said that correctly? It's just the way you worded it, it just sounded so great.
Mm-hmm. Well, the way it happened to me was honestly feeling the agony, and I'm not choosing the word lightly, feeling very small in terms of confidence, in terms of presence, feeling extremely insignificant and, you know, unseen and unheard, and yet feeling the pressure of never being small enough on the outside. You know, living with the idea that I had a duty. Which, and I find it funny to say those words now because I've gone so far past that in my own journey. But being stuck with the idea that I had to be on a quest, just, you know, by virtue of being a woman, I had to be on a quest to be eternally smaller in my body.
But this didn't come from inside your relationship with your partner, right, who is supportive of you. This is, we're talking big picture now.
We're really talking big picture. No, that wasn't something necessarily on the personal level. Although, I mean, I think we look at of women of our generation, and we've all grown up with, you know, it used to be magazines when we were younger. The internet wasn't around, but that. I look now at magazine covers, and it's funny that I didn't distinguish that at the time, but that's all you see. You know, diet, drop 10 pounds, the secret to, you know, there's so many variations on the theme of, you know, here is what you need to do to get smaller, because obviously this has to be your goal as a woman.
And I think that one of the problems, obviously there's tons of problems with these messages, but one of the problems that we have as women is identifying as being small. It's just an unrealistic expectation. And why is it important? And I think that, like, I'm talking about me personally now, I'm not a very big person. So being small is just sort of what identifies me. But I have many friends in the fitness industry that are stronger than me and fitter than me, and they're just so dynamic, and I love them. And these women are not as small as me, and I don't ever look at these women and think, you're not worthy. And I think that now we need to start reframing everything, all the dialogue that we've ever had about what being a strong, healthy, important, bold woman means.
Absolutely. And it doesn't come with a specific look at all. And I think that, you know, being bold and expresses itself, you know, in the way you carry your body, but also in the way that you carry your voice. And for me, that was a huge part of the puzzle, realizing at some point through all the work that I did and the searching that I did, that I was fixated on the notion that I had nothing to say, that my voice didn't deserve to be heard because I was probably fundamentally uninteresting. And I realized that at some point that that was essentially just a story that I had clung to all my life because it kept me small. It kept me safe in a certain way.
Yeah.
But it kept me also extremely unhappy. So working on that. And it's funny, we were mentioning accents before, you know, English being my second language. For years, I had sort of that hang up and I kept telling myself that, you know, I have no business working in English or, you know, speaking publicly in English because I have an accent. It's not my first language. And I find it extremely amusing that, you know, fast forward several years and I work almost exclusively in English now. I, you know, do language work in English as well. Working
and communication.
And communications in English. So I've suddenly become this, you know, authority on the English language, even though it is not my first language, because that doesn't really matter. That doesn't really matter. It doesn't inform my competence and even what I have to say.
And it's interesting about this whole dialogue, because the group of women that follow me actively definitely come to a stage in their lives where they do take a step back and say, okay, well what now? What happens now? You know, like you said, you went through life and you were like, you know, all of my ducks are lined up in a row. Like, I have everything I've ever wanted. I've got a great partner. I have children. I have a great job. You know, and most people, I'm generalizing here, tend to find that when they're in this stage of their lives, things tend to be maybe a little bit easier in their 20s and maybe a little bit more established, meaning they have family and good friendships and experiences that could create a good foundation for them. Yet there's always in the back of the mind the women during this age of like, well, now what happens? And I think that that's something that I experienced. I experienced it, but I did move through it. But confidence isn't one of my, I don't know if you've noticed, confidence isn't one of my issues. And I also was in a privileged situation where I was able to make a change without a huge financial impact on the family. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, I feel like I was extra lucky. But I do know that when a woman is already feeling, I don't even know how to really articulate the word, but when she's already suffering from low self-esteem, potentially low body image about herself because her body may have changed through menopause or just natural aging, maybe the children have left home, maybe her career is in a change. You know, there's so many things that are mixed into this, like you said, this whole view of our lives. What advice could you give women who are really in that situation now that are just saying, you know, what do I do now? What's the next step for me?
I would say a twofold advice. And it's interesting. I think one part of it is strictly has to do with our relationship with our body. As someone who, for a very long time in my life, for, you know, a plethora of reasons, thought that either there was something fundamentally wrong with my body or something had happened which I felt ruined my body forever. And that can be, you know, some of the injuries. I have a background in dance, so I have, you know, I've lived through several debilitating injuries that I'm lucky to have overcome now. I would say that sort of a first part of it, and it's really, really worthwhile work, is sort of address like this relationship that we have with our body and why and how are we, you know, so dissatisfied. And I did this extremely interesting experiment about 6 months ago where I asked, this was sort of to confirm a feeling that I had, but I had, you know, no data to back it up really. But I started asking women around me, and I had eventually, I think, 50 women work on that with me, on what type of body issues they had. And then asking them what kind of, you know, body issue conversations did they end up listening to growing up from the women in their life. And there was this amazing connection where, clear as day, I could see some women who'd grown up in very body positive households, you know, where bodies were just talked about on a very functional standpoint, grew up without feeling any, you know, particular issues with their bodies, and were very embracing of the changes with their bodies over the years, you know, through their teenage years and then motherhood and then, you know, approaching menopause or going through it and then and even beyond. And systematically, women who'd grown up in household where other women would systematically diet would talk about bodies, just to have conversations about bodies, about the appearance of bodies, mm-hmm. ended up having a much harder time. And I would say, first of all, being able, on a body standpoint, being able to sort of dig into that story, figure out what are the stories that you are carrying with you, and that might contribute greatly to the deep dissatisfaction that you are feeling right now, is extremely, extremely helpful. To that matter, two books which completely, completely helped me with that. Yeah. And one which you might know is This Wonderful Practice As Is, written by Erin Brown, which is something that's extremely easy to go through. It's extremely digestible, but opens up a lot of doors in our personal history. And there's another one called Warrior Goddess Training by Heatherash Amara, which is based on the Toltec agreements, which goes even deeper in our personal stories and, you know, what is harmful with us and what we can essentially just let go of to be freer and to be happier. So I would say that's sort of my first part of advice. And the second could be even simpler. I would call it, you know, notice and name everything that you are thinking and feeling.
This is something that I spoke with Carolina about on the podcast a few weeks ago. And actually, Deanna Harder, when she was on, spoke about,
yes,
just going back to part one about body dysmorphia, that she was, mm-hmm. she grew up in a household where her mom, very supportive and loving, was on a constant diet roller coaster, and Deanna lived around her mom constantly dieting, and that impacted the way she looked at food and looked at her body, mm-hmm. and that relationship. Moving back to the notice and name, I think that if we can, I'm going to get you to explain how you would do a notice and name about your feelings, but I personally think that if we could get every woman who is dissatisfied or does have low self-esteem to do this once a day, to get a book, get a journal, and every once a day, every time she has a feeling of negativity, do this exercise, and then just do that as a 2-minute exercise every day. I think that this would go a long way to helping her reframe everything. So can you tell me how you would go about doing notice and name?
For me, it's quite an ongoing thing, because I think I'm at that part of my journey. And interestingly, it's something that I started doing very early on. I mean, I knew cognitively that if I was thinking unhappy thoughts, it would, you know, lead me to be just unhappier. But that was sort of clear. But at the same time, being able to translate, you know, or to go from the simple dichotomy of I'm either feeling good or bad to, okay, what does that bad mean? Like, what does that mean exactly in this moment? And I could realize that, oh, well, you know, maybe I'm just bothered by this specific interaction that I had with a colleague. End of story. You know, no analyzing, no judging, just, okay, this is going on. And sometimes it's as simple as, oh, I'm hungry as well, which might contribute to the fact that I'm not feeling extremely good right now.
Yeah, if you're not feeling optimal in your nutrition, mm-hmm. it has so many adverse effects on the way your body, your mind works. So.
Oh, absolutely. And sometimes it can be as simple, and that's something that I keep saying as sort of a joke to everyone I work with, but sometimes just getting up, taking a little walk, and having a drink of water can solve so many issues.
Yeah.
But this is why this idea of just noticing and naming, instead of just throwing everything into a large bag of, meh, I'm feeling bad, you know, things aren't good, I'm in a bad mood.
But in addition to that, the notice and name is a worthy exercise because you're not looking for solutions.
No, exactly.
And going back to what you said in the beginning, one of the things that you thought you needed to do in order to make yourself feel happy or to just get out of this funk that you were in is that you needed to have a system and you needed to be organized, which I relate to because that's me. But there's not always an answer to everything that you need to find straight away. First of all, you need to do a little bit of the analysis and you need to dig a little bit deep to find out why these conversations are even happening in your head. So without actually having the ability to notice them and to acknowledge that they're happening, until you've created the awareness, you can't start making change. So it's so important to keep it simple and to just go there in the beginning. I even do this with my children. I think it's good for any area in life, not just for body positivity and acceptance. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, I agree with you. And I think that as women, in general, we are so solution-oriented that to be able to just notice something, have that awareness, and not try to fix it, not try to judge it, not try to overanalyze it, just realizing, okay, this is what I'm feeling right now.
And just be.
End of the sentence. And just be. Yeah. And one of the things that comes up when I speak about that with the women that I work with, one of the things that is often unnamed is, well, yes, Fabi, but that's really uncomfortable. And it is. I'm not going to say it's not. It can be quite an uncomfortable process. However, we are wholeheartedly better equipped to deal with that discomfort than we believe we are. And yeah. That's something that I mean, you've been uncomfortable in your life several times. You did not die.
No.
That's the thing. We've all experienced like great moments of discomfort. And we have not disintegrated from it. So just reminding ourselves that, like, it's okay to be uncomfortable. It's okay. We have, there's growth that can happen in that space. There's a lot of discovery. And we're used to discomfort because we experience it all the time.
And that's just such a great lead in as well to then starting to move from being small in all of our expectations. Because you said to me that one of the things that was holding you back is that you were a rule player and you didn't want to step outside of that because, you know, it's not how you lived your life, but you actually realized that it's sort of where the magic was going to happen for you. And so when we are small in our expectations of life, when we feel that, you know, where we are is probably our lot, that, you know, you may not ever reach your potential. And so if we want to be bigger in our person and bigger and bolder, we have to start having this element of discomfort in order to grow. And so doing these things, having this two-step process for you, Fabi, so going from, well, your relationship with your body and telling yourself that, you know, you are worthy and that you are lovable. It doesn't matter how you look. It's the person that you are. And then moving on towards this simple notice and name process. Is that then the goal to then becoming the big person that we have to be in order to reach our potential?
Well, I think it's sort of the basis to then be able to listen to our desires, you know, our deep yearnings, that when we are operating from the mindset of this is what I should want in life, so that's only what I'm going to strive for, rather than, you know what, like this interests me. It might not make any sense in the context of, you know, my very well-organized life, but yet it appeals to me. I should give myself permission to go and seek that, even though, you know, it's not something that is fitting in a grand plan. And because what happens a lot is that when we are, quote unquote, playing by the rules, we may give ourselves the opportunity to seek something else, but only as a reward for having played by the rules really, really well. Do you understand what I mean?
I completely understand. And I wonder whether, as well, we're talking about a generational thing, because I know you're younger than me by about 10 years, but mm-hmm. we still grew up in a time when we went to work. I worked for IBM for 10 years. And so I went to work from 8 till 6 every day. And then I went to the gym after work. And, you know, there was an expectation mm-hmm. that you had a job and you stayed with it. And then you had a child and then you put the child in daycare and you went back to work full time because, you know, there was a career that was to be had, and or you came back part time because that's what mums did, and mm-hmm. then your career was over. There was all of these expectations that we grew up with that it just evolved that way. And now we're at the situation where our generation, my children, I hope I've given them enough knowledge, they can see things in a completely different light. They see that you don't have to even go to work to have a good career. You can work for yourself. There's opportunities out there. And I wonder whether it's a little bit of a, like I said, generational mindset that it's really sometimes hard for us to break through.
I think there might be. And I think the cross-section between that generational aspect and the fact that I think globally, even still, women are much more expected to play by the rules. So, you know, with that double whammy, being able to say, I want that thing that makes no sense, but I'm going to go for it. Not because I've been so good and this is my reward, but because I deserve to go explore that because I'm worthy of it no matter what. It's a huge step to be able to get there, but at the same time, it's beyond freeing because it sort of breaks the bounds under which you've operated for so long.
Yes.
Say like, hey, you know what? I don't need a justification to want this. This is not, you know, this is not a treat. Mostly, I'm not going to hold out on going to get something that I desire because I don't feel that I've earned it yet.
Yes, exactly.
And that, that applies to so much in women's life. This whole idea of, you know, that I need to reach a certain point to be able to feel free, be happy, and, you know, the list can go on in the positive side, but the fact that there has to be this prerequisite to joy. And that's something that I'm very much against because I think it just keeps women wholly unhappy.
So we have to wind the show up now.
Yes.
But I think a great place to end this conversation would be to give our listeners an invitation to try and think about what it is in their life that they really do desire, that where their yearnings are, just to acknowledge what they might be. And it might be something as simple as, every week I'm going to have lunch with my friends and just have some good positive company. Or I might get my nails done once a week, and don't believe that it's because I've earned it. It's because I just want to.
Yes.
Right to the other end of the extreme, where they may turn around and say, I don't want to work for somebody else anymore, and I want to follow my passion, depending on where they are in life. So I think this would be a great thing for people to do, is just to invite them to acknowledge what that desire might be, and then start the dialogue with themselves. Can you do it?
Absolutely.
Can you do this? I'm interested. Let me know.
I love that you're coming sort of full circle to that, because at the very beginning of the interview, you mentioned being curious about my interest in burlesque dancing. And for me, that's exactly that. I realized in the last year, suddenly this desire to try burlesque dancing just appeared. Did it make any sense? No.
Thank you for remembering, because I actually didn't, and I'm super interested.
Yes, but I love how it fits really in the conversation this way. I'm extremely busy with work. I try to, sort of make everything happen work-wise and family-wise and be present with my family. And so the idea of like taking time out of all of this to go seek something that was entirely for me, and that, it doesn't seem like a very typical thing to suddenly get interested in a form of dance that's quite different at this point in your life. And yet I decided, because I have this firm belief that I am allowed to want what I want and to give it to myself, because I am worthy of it no matter where I am in my life, I started taking burlesque dance lessons, and I love it. It is extraordinary to just have created that space that is entirely mine. I show up there and I'm not the wife and I'm not the mother and I'm not the trainer. I'm not the coach. I am just me moving my body in a way that feels extremely good to me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And probably amazing for your husband too, as a side benefit.
Well, he hasn't seen anything yet. We'll see.
But the knock-on effect of how it really does make you feel more confident as well, though, and more relaxed and at ease with your body. Has to be good for everybody.
It really is. It really is. I very much appreciate that it is a very body positive art form and community. And there's a part of me who is almost wistful, because I think of, my 21-year-old self who at some point, really thought that there was no way she could like show so much of her body. Looking at myself, almost two decades later, where, extremely scantily clad during lessons, because that's what burlesque is, and, rocking everything about my body, and the folds and the squishy bits and the cellulite and the stretch marks, and just being extremely happy with it, because that's my body, it's mine, it's no one else's, and I cherish it simply because it's my body and it's my home.
Yeah, and it's beautiful, and that's a wonderful way to end. And I have to say, I found this really, really helpful, this show. You just opened up some new doors for me. I'm always looking to learn more and just to try and experience more in these conversations. So thank you so much. And thank you for creating the whole experience, which is something that's very important to you, I understand. And
I appreciate it. It really is. Well, thank you for having me on your show, Amanda. It's such a pleasure.
And happy birthday again.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And that's the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in, and we will see you again next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the show. For more information on the services offered by Amanda, please head over to her website at fitandchips.com. That's FITNCHIPS.com, or her Fit and Chips Facebook page. Leave a comment and she promises to respond to all questions. The views and advice expressed by Amanda Thebe are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider.